the relationship they have with union spouses is their first relationship and therefore of utmost importance. All future relationships are really based on the relationship that a child has with his parents. And so developing that relationship in a positive way is very important for positive relationships in the, throughout their lives. Beyond that, you know, a variety of issues and problems that people have. You want us? I just turned that on, is that right? A variety of issues that come up throughout the life cycle really are very much dependent on this whole relationship between parents and between parents and child. Okay, mm-hmm. Everything from how they function with other kids, how they function in school. In fact, I still remember one of the first things I learned psychodynamically, as a student working in high school clinic, was the idea that I had this kid who was become very, very firm, much firmer than his parents, you know, and the whole issue they had with him, and he was upset with them because they weren't firm enough. And the thing I learned back then is that, as my supervisor told me, he says, rebellion against religion usually means they're angry at their father. Okay? He said, and they could just as easily become not firm as very firm. Okay? And so the whole relationship with the father, and in this case the truth turned out to be rather true, but the whole relationship with the parents really sets the tone for the child throughout their life, okay? And it's something that needs to be worked on consistently throughout the life. It's not something that just happens, and especially difficult, I think, is that because as children, they get this handout that seems to be a whole textbook, but talks about child development as well. As children develop through different stages, they need different things, okay? And it's being all things to little people. You know, you have to be a little of everything, and as they grow, we have to adjust and, you know, to what their needs are as well. So that the importance of this is really, you know, it can't be underestimated. Just pull in some extra chairs. I think that's, you know, this is a really essential topic that really has to be talked about. We're not born knowing how to parent necessarily. Some of us have had better role models. Some of us have had lesser role models. But we all strive to be the best we can be at it. And that really does take a lot of work. And it takes a lot of discussion. It takes a lot of thought. So therefore, I think discussing it and hopefully talking about it today, we're just a step closer to where we want to get. Okay? You take it away.
Hi. Good morning. One of the things that's very striking to me as Orthodox Jews is where do we get our information on how to relate or how to build relationships with our children? What's the roadmap for that? And for me, it comes very much from the Yochim Omidos of Hashem that we all know so well. Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum V'chanun Erech Hapayim Rab Chesed V'emes Notzer Chesed V'alafim No say avon the fesha the chata'ah the nake. What does that mean practically? The first thing that comes to mind for me is that really without Hashem's mercy, without Hashem's compassion, none of us would be here. If Hashem ruled the world by din, by justice, by what was right, we probably would have all vanished a long time ago and the world would have been destroyed. So without Hashem's compassion, we wouldn't stand a chance. The beginning of Hashem Hashem is that before and after the sin, Hashem is still there, meaning that Hashem is always in relationship with us no matter what we're doing. The door doesn't get slammed in our faces. We don't get rejected. We don't get put in the silent treatment mode. We're always in connection. We can always improve our relationship. We can always do better because we are in relationship with Hashem. Hashem doesn't turn away from us. It means we can always grow. From the simplest thing, there's always a possibility that something can change and something can improve. Hashem Erech Hapayim, what does that mean? Hashem is slow to anger. That's incredible. Even when we infuriate Hashem, Hashem still is slow to anger. How does that translate for us as parents, that Hashem is slow to anger? even when our kids do something that is absolutely justifiably angry-making and makes us extremely upset, how do you handle it? Do you get angry? Do you yell? Do you scream? Is that appropriate? What do you do? I think absolute anger and showing that anger closes the door. There's no room for conversation. There's no room for discussion. It cuts off communication completely. But if we're slow to anger so that we can talk to our children even though we're angry, we feel disappointed vastly, hugely in what they did, but we can still talk with them about it and tell them that we're angry with them. The Rambam says, anger is something to be avoided. We can express ourselves in an angry tone, but we can never embrace anger and be overtaken by it. You're so angry that you just can't control yourself. That's never allowed. That closes the door. There's no communication. Then it's frightening, especially if the child is small. To be able to talk to your child about how angry you feel or how disappointed you are, and to continue to talk about what you expect and what the expectations are, is key. To talk about what the consequences of their actions that made you angry or that were against the rules of the house is to continue to remain in communication and in contact, continue to remain in relationship. It doesn't close the door. And it's good to show the kids that you're angry. It's good to show them that they did something wrong. That's fine. It's limit setting. But as long as there's constant communication. Rav Chesed, abundant kindness. What does that mean? In my humble opinion, no child was ever hurt by being loved too much. Giving too much? Too many things? Too much stuff? Absolutely. But no one ever became a monster because they were loved too much. MS. What does MS mean regarding us? Hashem keeps his word. We have to keep our word. Simply meaning, don't threaten things that you're never going to do. And don't promise things that you can't keep. Your word has to really be true and meaningful. It has to be MS. My kids laugh sometimes because they know already. When they ask a question, I'll say, we'll see. If I never commit right away, necessarily. And I found out that years later that they have a whole Peirush Rashi on what we'll see means, depending on how I say it and when I say it. And I didn't realize that they were interpreting, but they were. And they have a whole system of what it means when I say we'll see. But I don't like to say yes because I don't know if it can be yes. I want to think about it. I want to talk about it with them. And I want to think about whether it's something that we can do, something we should do, depending on the circumstances, depending on what's going on, and depending where that kid is at that particular time. Maybe there is someone who really has been working hard and has been really stressed, and on Monday they're begging for a day off from school. I'm not going to say yes on Monday necessarily, not before I've thought it through, not before I've seen where they're at, what's going on in school for them, how hard they've been working, or maybe they've been slacking off, and maybe they just want more time to slack off. Then I have to take it into consideration. And hence and therefore the magic words, we'll see. I'll think about it. Notzer chesed la'alafim. Hashem remembers good deeds forever, it seems. Find those good deeds. Look for them. Highlight them. Admire them. It validates what was, and it gives promise to what can be. If your child sees themselves as good in your eyes, they'll do more good. They'll want to do more. Children are innate pleasers. They really are. It's a question of catching your kid doing something good, but not just catching them doing something good in the moment, which is fabulous and powerful, but also remembering it later on, being in some activity later on, saying, you know, I remember 3 weeks ago when you did the dishes without me even asking. That blew me away. That was so special to me. Highlight it. You can't milk stuff like that enough. And it doesn't lead to ego. It leads to good feelings about themselves and about your relationship with them. And finally, no se avon vafesh avachat avanake. Hashem forgives intentional bad behavior and certainly carelessness or apathy. What does that mean for us? You have to love them no matter what they do. That's the bottom line. You don't have to approve of what they do. You don't have to give them a yashikai if it's been impossible. But the love has to always be there. That you love them, that they're special to you no matter what they do, and that you're always going to love them. You could be disappointed and still love them. But just the way Hashem will always forgive, no matter what we do, whether it was intentional or not, goes to us.
So, taking these concepts, how do we really work on this to develop a positive relationship? I think the first thing is really that parents, especially when you have two parents together, the most important thing is to develop a positive relationship with your spouse. Okay? You have to model what a good relationship is. Okay? Be able to show your love appreciation. Okay? Express things so the kids can see it and hear it. Say thank you to spouse. It's important to compliment the spouse and say, oh, that Shabbos meal was delicious. Okay? Or, you know, I can't believe how hard you worked, and I really appreciate it. Work as a team together, okay? Even dealing with your kids, okay? You can really help each other at avoiding anger, okay? If you're really frustrated with what your kid's doing, you're allowed to sort of take time out and say, well, you know, I'm going to have to talk to Mom about this. Okay? You don't have to respond immediately. You can really take a step back, okay? You can, you know, sort of take a time out and discuss the response together. It's very important to work out and talk about and agree on discipline issues. Okay? Parents have to spend time together doing that, and they have to come to some agreement. It's really confusing to kids, and it gives them too much power and opportunity to sort of split between parents when one parent is too much, you know, too easy, too allowing of everything, and the other parent is too much the heavy. It's okay that there's a little bit. They know, you know, one's a little, you know, that mom's a little nicer. Sometimes the case mom is a little tougher and dad's a little nicer. That's all right, as long as they know that mom and dad are in communication. And it's not like you're going to go to one and get a no and you're going to go to the other one and get a yes. Okay? It's really important to show that you're working together. And it's okay to compromise. The truth is, parents sometimes come in and they're really, how can they allow this? How can they say this is okay? It's going to be terrible. You know what? Where you set the lines, okay, where you make the limits is not nearly as important as being consistent about the limits. Okay? Being consistent, okay, so even if, you know, the lines aren't exactly where you want them to be, if you could agree upon it, okay, and you both say, okay, this is, you know, the kid wants to stay out till, you know, 11:30, and, you know, your wife's only say 11, and you want to say 9, and you agree on 10:30, and you're really upset about that, but you know what? It makes no difference, as long as they're really home by 10:30.
That's also one thing I wanted to interject. I remember earlier when our kids were younger, and they really weren't sure that we had this unified front. Like, they could test it. They wanted to test it. There was one quick sentence that we both knew how to say. What did Abba say? What did Ima say? Did you ask Abba? What did he say? Okay, I have to talk to Abba, or I have to talk to Ima. And that way they knew that there was no getting around us. It was us. It wasn't an Ima or an Abba thing. It was an us thing.
Thank you. Beyond that, strengthen your relationship with your spouse, okay? Go out on dates again. Spend some time together. If you're working together well, if you're enjoying your relationship, it's going to be a lot easier, you know, to deal with your kids as well, okay? Show them that you like spending time together. Really model for them what a good relationship is about. It's going to help you be better parents, and it gives kids a great sense of security. Okay? It really is very frightening to kids when parents fight. Okay? Because, you know, everybody has somebody in their class who's got a divorce, whose parents are divorced, or this. And kids, especially younger children, really get very frightened about quiet, and it really shakes their sense of security. So if you're allowed to yell at your spouse in front of your kids, you're also allowed to say, I love you in front of your kids, okay? And, you know, and some people really have a hard time doing this. But it's really okay to show that I really care. you're allowed to show, you know, appreciation, and you're allowed to show caring, and you're allowed to be thankful. And all these things are very important in strengthening relationships and modeling for your kids what you expect them to be able to do as well. Okay? I think what I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the other family traditions and things we can do.
This is one of my absolute favorite things. As from Jews, we have so many things that we think are prescribed, that are traditional. We have Shabbos, we have Yontif, we have fast days. There's so many ways our lives are circumscribed, which is so nice. So, but what can we do within those rich traditions that we have to create our own traditions with our family? This is part of family strengthening and part of family relationship. And this, for me personally, has allowed a tremendous amount of creativity in my life with my kids, with my husband. Talk about creating new family traditions and creating memories, memory making. For instance, let's take Pesach for a minute. A little close to talk about, but like, let's just talk about, not think about the calendar for a minute. We all know Pesach is stressful. It's hard. It's intense. There are a lot of expectations. There are things that we just have to do. But how can we inject memories in that are more positive? How can we inject activities in even Pesach preparation that will allow for good feelings and connectedness around this very stressful time? Okay, so what about, for instance, just at the top of my head, Erev Pesach, the kitchen's ready, everything's, you know, pretty, all the hard stuff is really done. And everyone's kind of tired and maybe a little wrung out. How about like the kids doing the charoset together? You supervise. And it becomes a tradition. Every year, the kids know that they're going to be making the charoset together. And it's a charoset making party. And they can talk and they can try out different, you know, the little kids can use the plastic knives. Or the little kids could be involved in just in sprinkling the ingredients as opposed to cutting and chopping and peeling. Personally, I have to thank my mother-in-law. Yes, Mom, I am thanking you publicly. She was the one who really created the charoset making party. Her house is always prepared 2 or 3 days in advance, and she invites all the New York grandchildren over from the time they were old enough to stand to her kitchen. And there is a charoset making party, there's a maror making party, and it is a potato kibbeh making party. So there's lots of peeling, chopping, dicing, slicing, and grating going on. And the truth is, I think initially when she did it, it wasn't meant to be a party. She really needed help. All of her children were married and out of the house, and she was left alone to be doing all the stuff by herself. Smart woman that she was, she enlisted the grandchildren. And the older grandchildren really supervise the younger grandchildren. It's something that my kids talk about till this very day, and they look forward to it, even though they're older. Some of them are in college, and they still want to go back to grandma's house because it's a nice tradition. It's a nice memory. That's not prescribed in the Haggadah, and it's not prescribed in any halachic journal about what we have to do for Pesach. It's a way of creating something new and unique within what we have to do. That's positive. That's connection-making. Hanukkah. To me, Hanukkah starts Thanksgiving. Because on Thanksgiving, when our kids have half days where they're off completely, we're making Hanukkah cookies. Thanksgiving and Hanukkah are usually on top of each other, or if they're 4 weeks apart, the cookies go in the freezer. But it's something that we do together. It's a time that we spend together. Birthday celebrations. Some people don't necessarily believe in birthdays. It's a nice occasion to mark, no matter how you're going to mark it. And I'm not talking about needing to bring in the ponies and the elephants for the birthday party. A simple cake, some cards, everyone getting together to sing happy birthday at some point when everyone's home at night, and that could be, I know, as late as 9:30 at night sometimes, or doing it on Shabbos, to mark that occasion, to make that person who had the birthday feel important. Everyone remembered me. Or to get the people involved in creating that tradition. Everyone picked out a card, or some people made cards, or some people picked out the cake, or some people made the cake, some people made the icing, just to bring those new traditions in. A Rosh Chodesh Adar party. I know a lot of my examples are around food. I feel bad about that. But hummus hashem making, to remember Rosh Chodesh, it starts, these aren't such big deal things. And maybe it's about going out and buying the hummus hashem. Not everybody bakes for life baking. Just find ways to create things that belong uniquely to your family. There's lots of room for creativity. There really is.
Now, getting down to sort of the nuts and bolts, okay, in developing the relationships, okay, I think it's really important to keep the goal in mind. We want to develop a relationship with our kids. It's one of the most important jobs we have as parents, as Jews, okay? It requires spending quality time and certain amount of quantity as well. You have to be there to have a relationship, okay? Don't always wait for your kids to come to you, okay? Because sometimes they'll think, oh, Dad's too busy, or he's, you know, it's too late, or he's not going to want to talk to me, or, you know, it's not worth it. Seek them out, okay? Find out what they're interested in. Remember, kids, they keep changing and developing and growing, and, you know, last week it was this, and another week later it's this, 2 months later it's something else, okay? But if you're listening and you show them that you care, they'll tell you what they're interested in. I always find it fascinating when parents bring in these really difficult teenagers to my office, and for some reason, I don't know, I was goody two-shoes growing up, but I really love working with these tough kids, and they come in. You know, and the parents say, oh, they won't tell it, but I don't know what's going on, and I'm worried about this and that, and I'm flunking at school and this, and the kids come in, and they start talking, and I'm interested, and I really, you know, I enjoy the kids, and I like them, and all this, by the time, you know, 45 minutes later, I know more about their lives than their parents do, okay? And it wasn't that difficult, okay, but there's a lot of anger and a lot of emotion involved with the relationship with the parents, okay. And I'm just somebody who really shows an interest and cares. Okay? And they're willing to talk. So that's just showing the interest, spending time doing things they enjoy. Okay? It's not always about just doing, you know, what you have to do. Okay? It shouldn't just be about, you know, getting the homework done, learning a certain amount, doing this, you know, getting this chore done. It should also be about throwing a ball. Okay? You know, I mean, where when kids were little is, you know, playing with Play-Doh. Okay? It's wherever, depending on where they're at, okay? That's where you're just spending the time with them and doing the things they're interested in doing. Okay? You know, even taking them to a ball game, whatever it happens to be. Doing the simple things together, valuing the simple things. Realize that that's not just, quote, a waste of time. Okay? Spending time with your kids is not bittul Torah. Okay? It's developing a relationship with your child. Okay? You have to do these things together, and it can be simple things. It doesn't always have to be, people think, you know, well, you know, I'm going to take them all to the circus, and we do this. It could just be going for a hike. Okay? Some of the best times our kids, if I ask our kids the best times they've had, most of them were not things that really cost money. Okay? It was, you know, the hike we took in Harriman State Park, or it was the, you know, it was the things where we spent time, and we just enjoyed the time together. Whether it be, you know, whatever it is, a walk, a hike, a bike ride, skating, learn. It's also, but you can learn with your child. I always found it fascinating. I had my kids, I have two boys, and so for, you know, their bar mitzvahs, I encouraged them to do a siyum on Shisha Sidre Mishnah. You know, so of course the older one was, you know, we got into it and had someone learning for this night, and I learned with him some in the morning. And when it came time for the next one, which was always very competitive with him, I said, you know, look, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll start at 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, and we'll learn 45 minutes. Then I'll take the yeshiva instead of you getting up and, you know, leaving the yeshiva on the bus at 7:30 or whatever, 7:35, get up early. And the next morning, 7 o'clock, he's dressed, ready, waiting for me. And this was for the next year plus, okay? He was up and ready and waiting for me, okay? He loved the fact that I was getting up and spending time just with him. Okay? Whatever we were going to do, I think it would have been important. The fact that it was, you know, but it was so special that I was going to put myself out and get up early and spend the time and cut out that time for him, that he was thrilled to be there, and it really wasn't an effort. Of course, as they get older as teenagers, it becomes a little more of an effort. But it was really great. You know, just doing the homework with your kids, share with them, listen to what's important to them, and share what's important to you. Okay? Let them know what you're interested in. Okay? Mostly listen. Listen, active listening. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Let's take a 5-second break. All right? Yes, please do. Ask a question. Go right ahead. Perfect time.
You say that the relationship you have with your child affects the relationship they have with the rest of their life.
Yes.
But it seems like there are two phases to this relationship. When they got divided, they got the relationship, and they were feeding, and they left their mommy and their daddy. That's one aspect of this relationship. Generally, when they get into this adolescence, everything seems to sour. So, which relationship are we talking about?
Okay. The question is...
Great
that
question.
If their relationship with their parents really, affects their future relationships. So it seems like when they're younger, they seem to be sweet and nice and much easier to have a relationship with. And they become teenagers, they become much more challenging. The truth is that... let's look at that for a second. Some teenagers... Okay, are naturally going to become more negative, challenging, argumentative, and so forth as they grow up, no matter how good the relationship is with their parents. They may feel they have a good relationship, and they're still going to constantly challenge you. It's part of the way they're separated. Okay, not every teenager necessarily has to do that. Many don't, but many do. Okay, but the key is that if you have a good relationship, even with their argumentativeness, okay, even when they're going to argue with you and fight with you and say, why do you say it has to be this way, that way, they're still going to maintain a good relationship. Okay, they can argue with you, and it could be on a, almost more of a sort of intellectual level, okay, and showing you that they know better, okay, because teenagers think they know it all, okay, that's part of their development, that they figured it all out. It's just the stupid parents are a little slow. But that doesn't mean that they've rejected you, okay? That doesn't mean that they've totally, given up and separated and then say, I don't want to be part of this family anymore, okay? They want to be part of it and they want to fight with you. And the fact that you're willing to argue with them, right, is validating them, okay? It shows that that what they're saying is important enough that you'll actually discuss it with them, okay? If you'd ignored them, okay, that would say that you totally dismissed them and didn't care about them anymore. So even the arguments, okay, and the key is that even when you argue with them, you can do it in a very calm, nice manner. You can listen to what they say, you can tell them why you don't agree with what they say, and that's all right. That's part of the relationship, that's where they're at. And that will continue a very, I think, a positive and healthy relationship. Kids go through difficult times. People ask me, why are my kids all of a sudden so hard? Well, how old are they? Oh, they're 12 now. Well, 12-year-olds can be very difficult,
You put it in terms of argumentation, seems to have an intellectual
bend
to it, rather than rebellion.
You have to understand, their rebellion is really one, the developmental goal is separation. They have to show that they're not you, that they're themselves, okay? And the key is that you can call it rebellion, but the key is that there's no rejection, okay? You don't reject them, and then hopefully they shouldn't reject you, okay? They can argue with you, they can even take a slightly different path, I know friends where, their kids became a little bit firmer, and, now they who want to sit in colo, the parents are upset because they're not in college. I have friends, who the kids went to college and the parents are upset. They'll take a slightly different path. But if you can accept your child as they, and say, as long as, this is, how you want to plead, you have the right to, okay? It may not be my way, but it doesn't mean it's necessarily wrong, and I respect what you're doing. Most, the great majority of time, when you have a good relationship with a kid, they eventually come back. Okay? There's, Baruch Hashem, most kids, after all, that they want to be part of the family. They want to connect. And most of the real rebellion is because kids feel they're not connected. They feel there's no place to connect to. They've never developed that relationship. They don't feel really very well connected. And part of the argument of the rebellion is that in essence, really what they want to do is get your attention. Okay? And sometimes what I have with parents is like, you know, the kids who are, you know, behaving in really inappropriate ways, and the parents are just sort of like wet noodles, and they're not responding. And it makes the kids nuts because they're doing this to get a response, consciously or unconsciously. Sometimes they're aware of what they're doing. You know, sometimes even conscious. And they can't get a response, and what that says to them is you don't give a damn. You don't care. Okay? So you have to show you care. Sometimes showing care is by saying, no, you can't. Huh. You know? That's the way it is. This is my house. These are, the rules are, you know, we set limits here because we care about you, and that's it. I'm sorry you think all your friends are doing it. Everybody gets to do that. You know, you hear that every time. And everybody means one kid said that maybe his parents will let him. Okay, that's everybody.
There's actually a TV commercial like that now. There are two boys talking about doing one boy approaches him.
Yes. Well, as they get older, by the time you're talking about 12, 13, 14, what you really have to start doing is negotiating it. And we're going to talk a little bit about family meetings and so forth, where you really, in other words, you still set the rules, but you have to include your children in the discussion and understanding why those are the rules. Well, at college age, the rules change again. I mean, like, a lot of college age kids, like, I have a girl in college who's in the dormitory all week. Do I know what time she really comes in at night? Am I able to monitor that? You know, thankfully, I think sometimes not. But you hope by that age, if you're letting your kid go out of the house, then the assumption is that you trust them enough and you trust their judgment and you trust that you've brought them up. And if not, then they shouldn't be going. It's like the whole issue of sending kids to a character stroll when they're 17. Okay? For many kids, it's the greatest experience. For some kids, they have no business going because they're really not ready to take on that responsibility yet. Okay? So that, you know, yeah, if the kid is able, you know, is college age, they should be able to make good judgment and good decisions on their own. Now, I will tell you that in this country, most college age kids really don't. Okay? And therefore, where you send your kid and what type of supervision is there is really a very important issue. You know, I treat a lot of kids who aren't Jewish or aren't from in college, and basically what goes on in the colleges is, you know, it's not about anything from a religious perspective, it's just, you know, bizarre. I mean, basically, you know, the kids get drunk, they hook up, it's not a normal type of behavior or relationship at all. But that, you know, yeah, but there's a lot of craziness going on there, but you want to make sure that your child has a good enough judgment, right? If you're going to give them that freedom, you trust their judgment in what they're going to do, okay? And if not, then you really need to keep the supervision on time. You know, the supervision gets let go in levels, a little bit at a time. Okay. One more, and we'll continue. Yeah. Yeah. Well, sometimes we're kind of going to talk a little bit about family meetings also that's going to address some of those issues, okay? And sometimes it's really a compromise of, okay, this day everybody's doing this together, and this day you can do this with your friends, you can do that with your friends, and we'll do this, or they'll split up, and the boys will do this, and the girls will do that, okay? So that there's no hard and fast rules. Okay, but it's a matter of really taking people's, you know, rules into consideration. And some days they're going to have to compromise. Not every day are they going to do everything they want. Okay, it's not a perfect world. Okay, but that's part of being part of a family. And it's important that they understand that. Let me just go on to a couple of points. I just came to the point of active listening. I think it's very important. You know, when you learn to be any type of psychotherapist, they talk about this a lot. You listen and you ask questions about what the person's saying. Okay? That's active listening. You show that you're really listening to what they're saying. You're not thinking about something else. You're not thinking about the problems at work. You're focused on what, where you are right there and then, and focused on what they're talking about. Okay? Show that you care, okay? And, you know, really, that you're, what they're saying is important to you and makes a difference. Okay? And maybe your problems of business loom much larger than their, you know, their little problems with their friends at school. But trust me, in their world, this is the biggest issue. Okay? To them, this is a, what they're talking about is usually huge. Okay? And you have to look at it from their perspective, not just your own. You have to remember that the little kids, you know, what Shane just said, in you know, the nasty thing she said today, it bothers them the rest of the day. That's a big issue. Okay? The expectations should never outweigh love. Okay? Your love is not dependent on what they achieve, and they should never feel like, I've got to do well so you love me. They should feel, I've got to do well because I want to, you know, I want to show how good I can do. Okay? And you could be really proud of them for doing well. But they should never feel that, you know, if I do well, I'll be loved more. Okay? You're going to be loved more whether you really do well or don't do well. Okay? And they're not going to do better because they think they're going to get more love. Okay? They can become more fragile if they think their love is dependent. You don't want it to be an ahava shesuya b'davar. Right? It should be ahava she'ena tzuya b'davar. It's not totally in anything else. It's purely unconditional. Okay? And it's really important that every child know that and mean that and mean that, that know that that's what you want. So that, you know, in really growing this relationship, okay, you have to have family time, you have to, you know, put the time in with these individual kids, you have to put the time in as a family. Having meals together. My wife has been on my case since I can't remember when, and every time I start staying a little later at work, I wanted to see another, you know, patient, and we, you know, there's always this issue, you know, you got to make enough to pay all the mortgage and tuitions and everything, and she says, you know, got to be home for supper with the kids. Okay, can't do it every night, do it a few nights a week. You know, I understand you have a late night here, you have a late night there, but, if, you know, sitting around the table and at the meal together once a day is an amazing event. It really strengthens the relationship. And, you know, validating what each kid says, just what happened during their day. Okay? Every kid gets a turn to talk. Okay? Teach them how to talk and show respect for each other and listen to each other and take each other seriously and have a good relationship with each other. Okay? You want to talk about the family meeting?
Yeah. I like that question before about fellowship. Thank you. But we ride into my next point, and that's family meetings. What are family meetings, and how did they come about in my mind? It was something I'd heard about once, had a vague idea about it, but wasn't really sure what it was or what to do with it. But what became apparent to me past the point when the kids were younger was I would tell child A, no, you can't do that. You can't. There's no TV on school nights. But invariably, child B seemed never to hear that message. They never got it. So it's like, okay, I found child B, like, you know, doing TV on Tuesday night. Like, what are you doing? I didn't know we weren't allowed to do that. That's where family meeting time came apparent to me. This is what we needed a family meeting for. We needed to all get together, my husband, myself, the kids, in a quiet place, no homework, no distractions, no telephones, no computers, no homework. Just get together for the 15 or 20 minutes or whatever it was to lay down policy, to talk about what we expected, what the rules were, so that all the information, it was like CCing everybody, all the information was disseminated to everybody at the same time. And there got to be discussion in those family meetings. We would say something and the kids wouldn't say, right. No, they didn't do that. They really didn't. We would talk about it. We would definitely have conversation, we would argue about it, but we would work it out and we would talk about it. Now, the problem with that is that past the point, every time we would call a family meeting, the kids would go running in opposite directions. It's like, we're not going. They're going to put down new policies. We don't want to hear what they have to say. So that's when we, you know, originated another aspect of the family meeting. And what that aspect was is the Chol-Moed's coming. We want to talk about what we're going to do. We want to plan it. We want everyone to feel like their needs are being taken care of and considered. What are we going to do on Chol-Moed? There are 3 days. well, you know, we have older kids and we have younger kids. Their needs are very disparate. We have boys, we have girls. Their needs are disparate. What do we do? As the kids get older and the age gaps are wider, it's much more challenging, as I'm sure you all know. But no matter what, we always said there had to be at least one day when we were all together. And that was the day sometimes that we did the hike or that we went to the science museum and then everyone could go off on their own and come back together again for lunch. No, museum's not serving masa. So if they get hungry, they come back. That became a much better, more positive way to use the family meeting. We got our rules down, we got our expectations down, but then they realized they could also plan things. And if there were things that they wanted, we needed a new, I don't know what, maybe it was a computer, I'm probably making it up. We got to talk about it. Why do we need a new computer? Do we really need a new computer? What's wrong with the old computer? Who uses the computer? What do we use it for? What do we need? It became a time when we could all consider each other's needs, talk about it, argue about it, settle it maybe, continue it at the next family meeting, what a concept. So like there's, you know, more to discuss next time, and we're like kind of left with a little bit of tension, which is okay. It's okay to have a little bit of tension because they know there's going to be another time when we can all sit and talk about it. The other thing I'm going to continue about the family meal, that's like that's one of my religious things. It's like, you know, I daven every day, I have a family meal every day. My husband, unfortunately, can't always be there. But I sit down with the kids every day from the time they were little. I don't work during dinner hour. We always sit together. And even from the time they were little, and it was hard to really train them to sit at the table. Because it's a learned house, but they didn't come that way. But they learned how to do it, and they also learned how to listen to each other, and only one person could talk at a time. That was my rule, and everybody got to talk, but they would all sit there like waiting. They wanted to talk. But while they were sitting waiting, they got used to the fact that they had to listen to their brother or their sister tell their spiel about the day, and it became nice, and it became something that we all really looked forward to. And now that I'm busier than ever, now that they're all in school, I really look forward to that time when we can sit down every day and listen to each other. And I tell the kids, I share that with them. I said, this is my happiest hour of the day. It's a time that we can all come back together, we can reconnect. And you know what? They're not always happy campers. School is hard. And you know, I always ask them, and I'll start out by saying, and how was the day at the war? And they laugh because I'm validating that it wasn't pleasant out there and that it was stressful and it was hard. So that's already opened up the door for them to say something that I don't necessarily want to hear, but I have to listen to anyway. But there also was a rule about that. There was a period of time when the kids would come through the door, all they wanted to do was complain. Life was just one big horrible mess. And I got tired of listening to it. It was overwhelming for me. And I was the one who was listening to it, because my husband was in the office. I said to him, you know what? You can tell me everything you have to say. I want to hear everything. But you have to come through the door. And the first thing that you have to tell me is something positive about your day, because I'm sure there was something in there. Maybe it was lunch, but tell me about lunch if that was the only positive thing in your day. I want to hear about it. And then we can go on to the nitty-gritty and the harder things. And that's what we do at the dinner table. And I share with the kids, really, how precious that time is for me. And when they're not there, you know, there are kids who have all kinds of activities after school. They have to stay later for Mishmar. We really miss them when they're not there. And I tell them when they come home that we really miss them and that it wasn't the same without them, which is how Shabbos, which we'll talk about a little bit later, has become incredibly special to us.
I'm just going to talk for 30 seconds now because I really want you to just get to Shabbos and leave more time for questions because I think that's important. I want you to be able to discuss your concerns and hopefully we can do more of that. Just a little bit more in terms of these family meetings and family time together is, you know, we touched on the issue of discipline and not being afraid to set limits. Kids really like parents. You know, we asked my 16-year-old, well, wow, you know, what should we tell them about, you know, having a developing relationship with your kids? And he says, well, I think it was good that you were tough parents. You know, but he really saw that as the fact that because we set limits, it really showed that we cared and we were involved. Okay, and you know it really can be done in a positive way. You have to remember that in disciplining kids, it's really interesting. We do parent training classes and so forth. Parents want to come in and find out how do I punish my kid, and we spend most of the time talking about how to develop a relationship. Because in number one, in disciplining kids, rewarding them is much more effective than punishing them. And you are the reward. Right? That's really the key. The best discipline is when you're the reward. Okay? The prize I often tell parents should be, you know, you spend time with the kids, you do stuff, and the prize at the end of the week should be that they get to go out to for pizza with you for half an hour alone. Okay? That's a super prize. Okay? Doesn't have to cost more than a slice of pizza. Okay? Because it's really not about giving them. It's really about being connected to them. And that means more to them than anything else you can give them. So that, you know, all this is about is really, you know, you have to remember that children naturally, they idolize their parents. You know, little boys think that their parent, their father is Superman. Okay? They start out that way. Okay? We're, you know, until we ruin it for them, you know, until they get older and recognize the reality, and that's part of the development, but basically they start wanting to emulate their father. Most little boys and most little girls want to be what their father and mother is. Okay? That's really their goal. Okay? So we just have to build on what is there naturally. Okay? We just have to take what's there and nurture that. Okay? And we can do that by spending the time we do that, but even in the discipline, done in a positive way, is really part of a positive relationship. Why don't you finish up and we can take some more questions.
Okay. This is something that also has developed over time. The Shabbos table as a vehicle to create family intimacy. And what do I mean by that? I think Shabbos table can be very challenging and very hard, especially Friday night. Everybody's wrecked from the week. Everybody's tired. People are grouchy. The kids have had more than they can handle. As the clock changes, the meal is later. It's like, how do you get everybody to, like, pull together and, like, be normal even, or try? So, you know, depending on the time of the year, depending on the age of the children, sometimes it's not Friday night. Sometimes it's Shabbos lunch. And now that our kids are older, they like to go off. They're, you know, Shabbos home here, friend there. But there's at least one Shabbos to two Shabbatot a month that we have to all be together. I just put the limits on it. I like them. I want to be with them. And when I express that to them, even though they don't get exactly to do what they want to do, I don't think they're too upset that I like them and I want to be with them. It doesn't hurt that much. So some of the things that we started doing around the Shabbos table, which we found very effective in a way, in the effort to create greater understanding and intimacy with each other and greater, really, involvement and connection, was we do a gratitude moment. Usually it's Friday night, especially now in the winter. I don't know what's going to happen, you know, whether we flip it in the spring. A gratitude moment, or Simchat HaShavuah. Every single, we stop at some point, usually after we eat, so everybody's, like, calm and they're not starving. And they know it's coming, like, now they laugh. They know it's coming. We say, you know, okay, Simchat HaShavuah. What, you know, pick a time during the week that is really great for you and tell us about it. Why? And it ranges from all different kinds of things. You know, someone got a great birthday present. They were really happy that they shared it with everybody. From my perspective, gratitude, them being able to pick out a piece of the week, and us, we do it also, and our guests are invited to participate. We do it whether we have guests or not. Being able to pick out something good from the week and express it and be mindful of it, and embrace it and look at it is a way to create positive feelings and positive attitudes. Because there really is so much to complain about in any given week. Life is stressful for us, life is stressful for our kids. But if we could even pull out one moment in that hectic, difficult, chaotic times that we live in, and that there's a good moment to savor and appreciate, that's important, that each person gets the time to share that. And the other key rule is that there has to be, and you have to maintain, an attitude of non-judgment at the table. No judgmental attitude. You know, you can leave that in your bedroom. You can't bring that to the table. You have to listen with respect. And even if you think it's funny or ridiculous, keep it to yourself. Or you can say it, but you can say it respectfully. And the other thing that we started doing more recently that we love and the kids laugh about it, and hopefully one day I'll get to do a workbook on it. I want to create a workbook on how to use the Shabbos table. It's to come up with one thought-provoking question that gets people thinking about their own ideas and attitudes and lets everyone else understand that person on a deeper, more intimate level. What do I mean by that? I'll give you a couple of examples. If you could pick one talent to be gifted with, what would it be and why? Kids are like, yeah, that's interesting. And what we found from that question, the interesting thing about that question was that every single kid in the family picked the same thing. They all just wanted the same thing. I'm not going to elaborate because that's their privacy. But it was interesting to see how they all said the same thing in different ways, in different levels, which lends us to all believe that their value system was very similar. Yes. I'd love to. If you could pick a talent that you could be gifted with, what would it be and why? Why would you want that? If you had 1 year of your life to redo, which year would it be? And why would it be that year? If you could spend one evening any way you wanted to, what would you do and who would you do it with? It's interesting and fascinating to see what the kids come up with. What we come up with, what our guests come up with. I mean, our guests sometimes, like, you know, they get a little nervous, they want to run under the table. Why did we come here? You know, they did that. But you know what? Once people start talking, it creates an atmosphere that's safe, that's intimate, where we care about each other. We want to know each other more. We want to understand each other better.
What do you do when the child comes up with a new crazy thing to do? You said you should be non-judgmental, but I mean, some things...
You let it go, because guess what? It's only a fantasy. It's not happening. And you know what? It tells you a lot about your child. And it tells you a lot about what your child wants you to know about them. And the key point, I think, is that everyone really needs to be encouraged to listen. Because what everyone is saying at the table is so important. It's so key. How are you going to know your brother better? What are you going to remember about your brother if you never listened to him? If you never heard what he had to say or what he was thinking or what was going on in his heart and his mind? And it also encourages, especially with boys, their ability to express themselves. How many teenage boys say more than two grunts? You know, we're lucky if they string the grunts together. But this allows them to really get thinking and moving and being able to express themselves in a safe, happy way. And really also, I think it's great to encourage, it's a great opportunity to teach them listening skills. You know, it's not just us who have to listen as parents. They're going to be parents, they're going to be spouses, they're going to be boyfriends and girlfriends. They need to learn how to start doing the listening. And they're allowed to ask questions. Why did you pick that? Could you tell me more about it? It's great for them to be able to learn that skill at home in a safe way. And this is for younger kids, if you have younger kids at home, because this is a little bit, I think everyone can do it almost, depending on the question. But one thing that I really like when the kids are little, and they get into it also, is Shabbos Parsha reenactment. From the Parsha, depending on what we're reading, you know, obviously Bereishis and Shmos. I mean, the Korbanos are interesting also when they do that, depending on what they know or what they learn. But, you know, you can have different parts to it. There's a director, there's a narrator, there are actors, there are props. I mean, the stuff that can come out. But the key also with that is to make it fun, to laugh. Because it doesn't have to be serious. It can just be fun, and that's all it's about. And that also, that's memory making. For the older kids, it's Divrei Torah. I want to be careful when I say that Divrei Torah. I want to qualify and say I respect Divrei Torah. I think they're important. I think they're crucial. I think it's a lot of what keeps us going. But when it comes to the kids, I really don't think it need to be done in a pressured way. And I really don't, you know, all our kids come home, you know, with this, pages of stuff. I don't like that. I don't appreciate it. I want them to say something. Because sometimes what that boils down to is taking the 10 minutes with them before Shabbat, maybe on Thursday night, and saying, you know, what do you have? Let's write something together. And then they can present it without reading the 32 pages that the Rebbe or the Maror prepared. That's kind of meaningless. It's a nice exercise in reading, and they can read, thank God. And I think one thing that I also just want to underscore and let's, you know, keep in mind is that I think Shabbos is what's really kept us together and kept us alive over the course of history. The Shabbos home, the Shabbos table, the Jewish home, that's where it's at, that's what it's all about. It's really, if we didn't have Shabbos, if we didn't have a time to come back and reconnect with each other, I mean, I don't know what it was like living back, you know, in Eastern Europe in the 1800s, I really don't, but I know what it's like today for us. We can be scattered, you know, for days on end, hardly seeing each other, hardly touching base with each other. Shabbos is precious, it's valuable. I think it really keeps us going. Thank you.
Just to summarize then, I want to take questions for both of us. Hopefully, we've given you a little help in terms of being able to listen and listen actively and ask questions. How to spend time with the kids to make it more meaningful for both you and them, be able to show them respect and show them love, and how being a good spouse and working together, you know, as a team, really can make parenting a more enjoyable and hopefully more effective. Okay? And if there are any questions, please go right ahead.
You talked about the argumentative child and setting limits. But what happens if they don't agree with the way you set limits? And this is day in, it's a day out, it's always something. If it's not the car, it's curfew, why not? So they wear you down emotionally. Really.
Okay, now, right.
You're given.
Their job is to argue, and but the key is that if you're setting limits, as I tell parents very often with younger kids, it's okay, I don't care where you draw the line, but once you've drawn the line and you're clear and you said no, you can't then go and change because they argue a lot, because they throw a tantrum or whatever the reason, okay? Once you've decided this is it, okay, this is it. If you want to renegotiate at some later point because now they're older, this, that's a different story. But that's the idea of, you know, when there are two parents and working together, you can give each other support. You can do tag teams. So if it's one on two, you have a better chance of surviving it. And some kids can be very difficult. Ideal, you know, most of my practice is with these very difficult kids. Thankfully, it's only 20-25% of the kids that are really considered difficult. Most kids really are not so difficult, but some kids really are. But if you include them, if you show that you listen to them, you didn't just dismiss what they said. You listen, you heard them, and that at some time in the future, maybe that will be the case, but right now, you can't agree with it. You're going to have a lot easier time. They're going to come back less, okay, because it's when they don't feel heard that they're just going to keep coming back at you. When they feel they were heard and validated, they're going to come back a lot less. It'll make your job easier. Getting to the point that they feel heard is not so always so easy with teenagers. Okay? But that's what you got to figure out. Yes? You tell, well, number one, you catch him in it. First thing you do is, I've got to talk to Daddy. I didn't say you have to talk to Daddy. I said I have to.
Yes,
okay?
You don't want to tell the child
they're wrong. You never want to ask a child, is that true, and catch them in it. You want to tell them, I'm going to talk to Daddy, come back and say, Daddy didn't say that, period. Okay? And this is the way it is. Okay, one last question.
It's a good question. The key is, and you know, the question is, what are your expectations? We're not all going to sit at the Shabbos table when the kids are little for 2.5 hours like the proper little soldiers. Lo hayav, lo yinyeh. So what are your expectations? Is it a 15-minute window when you have the kids, you know, ready and, you know, there to do what you need to do with them? Make it shorter.
Thank you very much.